Boom, boom, boom. It's Baffin Spears Broadsides coming at you again. 2.5 hours on November 25th, 2001. Stay with us. Lots of interviews, lots of fun, some sadness. Stay tuned. Continue the fire, the crackle and the warmth, and your opportunity to nestle around the radio here this Sunday morning. For 2.5 hours, we're going to be beaming at you, at least this particular show is, on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, 96.3, or if you're on the web, we're at www.microradio.net/FRSC. It's nationwide, international, in fact. We go out everywhere, and we take no commercials, we take no shit, and we give you an opportunity to express your own views over the airwaves, airwaves that should be the property of the people everywhere, but unfortunately, of course, like most other things, are the property of the few. That's what we are, at least I am, hopefully going to see change. With actually, it's not something you can hope about, it's only something you can do something about. And my little piece of the rock here is working on civil rights for poor people, homeless issues, actually restoring and kind of fighting a losing battle, but certainly it's a retrenching battle to secure such basic rights as the right to be in public spaces without harassment from authorities, the right to be in public spaces without having to justify yourself by presenting your credit or, will it be soon, your ID card, the right to sleep at night somewhere, the right to be treated as a human being without second-class citizenship. That's what my concern is on this show, and I hope that's also your concern, too, as you walk the streets, as you go through your life, as you listen to this show. You can tune in if you want to talk about this. Perhaps you don't feel everyone deserves basic civil rights. I'd certainly like to talk about that, since that seems to be the dominant impression among those who run the country, based on not just how they're treating now immigrants, who now, of course, can be subjected to secret trials, selectively detained indefinitely. The entire Bill of Rights seems to now be a thing of the past, unless, of course, enough people stand up and insist this cannot be. My concern, again, is the local civil rights situation here in Santa Cruz. We've always had a city council intent on preening itself for its so-called progressivism, but actually treating homeless people in a fashion that defies the UN Charter, the Geneva Conventions, the U.S. Constitution, the California State Constitution, Judeo-Christian religious principles, the Green Party platform, Mayor Green Party Fitzmaurice. And actually, the basic philosophy of the very organizations that elected the progressives, as they like to call themselves, to power, whether it's talking SCAN, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, CalPERG, Peace and Freedom Party, all these groups that coalesced to help get Crone, who will soon be our mayor, Fitzmaurice, Riley, Porter, Sugar in power, now find themselves, of course, betrayed on this basic issue of restoring civil rights for poor people. And, of course, this is something that I continue to repeat because not only does it need to be repeated, but it's these betrayal of civil rights is happening every day through the instrumentality of the Santa Cruz Police Force, the deputy sheriffs, the Parks and Rec Rangers, not to mention the local media. And we're going to be looking over all of that. But perhaps what we really need to do is listen to the voices of the people themselves who are out there. And every Thanksgiving and Christmas, I get an opportunity to actually talk to folks in one place. They're all hanging out in line, or many folks are hanging out in line, waiting for the two good meals of the year at the Vets Hall. And that's what was happening on Thursday when I went there. Right before we begin that, however, I want to make a quick announcement or two. Tomorrow, some of you may know already, some of you may not, at 11:30, not at 1:30, I've been announcing 1:30, or perhaps there's been some confusion, 11:30 a.m. is the Camp Paradise trial verdict announcement. These are four individuals staying at the Clean and Sober camp on the San Lorenzo River, Camp Paradise, as they call it. It's right near Denny's restaurant. I'll give directions now to get there later. We may actually have a call from folks from Camp Paradise later if we can get that cellular phone operational down there, maybe from friends at Camp Paradise near Camp Paradise. Like, kind of curious to know how the horrible storm, actually not too horrible for those of us indoors, but the storm has treated them. Camp Paradise goes back to court on Monday after a two-day trial last week. And I wasn't able to secure the tape for that trial yet. It'll have to be probably by Thursday, but we're still working on getting the court tape. But you'll be able to hear the verdict of the four Camp Paradise folks accused of, you got it, camping. That is to say, trying to survive by sheltering themselves from the rain and the elements, and then criminally falling asleep on unused, out-of-the-way public property. And, of course, in the course of all this, Camp Paradise people, I think, legitimately claim to have cleaned up the area considerably, remarkably, some say, not to mention of trash and needles, but just to make the whole area safe for the local community, which some of that local community appreciates, and, of course, some does not. There is one large apartment building that gave some 35-odd complaints. I think two-thirds of the folks complained they wanted Camp Paradise and, quote, the trash gone, whether it means the city wasn't picking up the trash, whether it means that people who are homeless are on the periphery of Camp Paradise, kind of huddling in there because Camp Paradise, because of its community support, has not been removed by the police department, not been forced to move. And again, because of internal organizing, publicizing themselves, and getting support from the community, Camp Paradise lives, continues to live. Wet but unbowed, as I understand it, at least at the moment, though I want to get an update on that. And we'll find out, however, what happened in court for tickets given on August 3rd, bunches of them by homeless resource center individual Eric Seeley, who is running around with his bogus vouchers, some of which could not be used, none of which could be used the day that they were supposed to be usable because he was telling people to break camp and leave on August 3rd in the morning or be cited and have their property taken away in the near future. And that kind of lying, intimidating, dare I say, terrorist threat. Because what greater terror is there to tell someone that they're going to lose all their property and then they're going to go to jail? I suppose you can threaten to kill them. That's more of a threat. But it seems to me along the same lines, particularly when you have the power of the local government backing you up, to go around saying these things to homeless people with the little sign on your lapel that you are the homeless resource officer, to me is pretty low. And if Officer Seeley wishes to call in and discuss this on the air, or a representative of his, or a sympathizer of his, please. We have a phone line in here, 427-3772. But as with the city council that doesn't return their calls, The police department isn't interested in discussing these things. They've got the guns, they've got the badges, they've got the budget, they've got the radios, the pepper spray, and the batons, and they will do what they want. And I know some police officers laugh at this when I tell them, because there's so much more, no doubt, that they feel they want to do if they had more liberty than they already have, which I think is immense. In California, the police have huge protections from any kinds of lawsuits, from any kinds of public transparency, so you can see what their discipline system is, or you can hold them accountable in police review boards. We have no police review board, for example, that holds people accountable, just this citizens police rah-rah board that simply essentially rubber stamps what the police department does, with a few exceptions, very few exceptions. Anyway, Camp Paradise at 11:30 on Monday, that's tomorrow, at Department 1 at 701 Ocean Street. That's the main courthouse, the flat building next to the five-story county building, is where folks will be gathering to hear the verdict of the Commissioner Joseph, Irwin Joseph, who has heard the necessity defense from attorneys Paul Sanford and Matthew Williamson, and the rather pathetic showing of Jennifer Pouchot, the assistant city attorney, who John Barisoni, apparently too busy stuffing himself with turkey or maybe reading another book, as he always does at city council or a magazine, I guess bored as he is with the proceedings, he didn't bother to show up himself for this matter, or even send his chief deputy, Tony Condotti, but he sent a completely inexperienced novice city attorney to take the heat on a rather complicated defense on an issue that is very hot, which is, since there are 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in our city limits, that's not our county, where there are, I estimate, 6,000 to 10,000, but 1,000 to 2,000 only in the city itself. And there are only 114, count them, folks, 114 spaces, space for 114 people, according to Ken Cole, that's emergency shelter space, any one night, if you include the armory and the three church groups, then what is happening to the majority of homeless people, given the fact that the city council has this absurd, cruel, and unconscionable sleeping ban law, which makes it illegal to actually fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night? And more important, of course, or as important, that's actually has an importance all its own, the camping ban law, the larger camping ban law, which isn't regulate camping, it bans all camping in the city, with the exception of camping on private property, provided that the zoning board doesn't go after you, or the zoning authority, or the planning department, and that's one minor exception to the camping ban. And then there's an exception for sleeping in a vehicle for 3 nights per month. The other 27 nights, who knows what you do, in a driveway. That's what's called the Fitzmaurice 72 hours and get out of town rule, as David Silva so aptly put it. He's the one who put that one into force. Or if you get lucky, there are a few people who can sleep in their vehicles on church property and on business property with the written permission of the business or the church. And I don't know more than one or two dozen people who can do that. Out of, again, 1,000 to 2,000 people out there each night. Now, it's bad enough that the city doesn't have any kind of affordable housing or rent control or shelter for these folks. But more than that, it simply wants to go out and tell them you have to either buy a motel room, impose on a friend or family, go into a domicile. You can't even fall asleep in a movie theater or in a restaurant. That is illegal. Hasn't been enforced lately, isn't always enforced, but it has been enforced in the past. For example, at Los Chorales restaurant in 1989, 11 years ago, when then Chief Bassett of the police department sent his troops in to actually raid the restaurant because a restaurant owner was letting homeless people sleep in the restaurant at night. That was the year after they raided a church, the Red Church, which is now acting so badly toward the drummers across from the farmers market. Then it was under more liberal leadership, and it was the police raided the church, wouldn't let homeless people sleep in the church, even with the permission of the church. So we have a really difficult situation. We have a situation where they sent this Jennifer Pouchot, the city attorney, deputy city attorney, to argue that somehow it's not necessary for homeless people to sleep at night or shelter themselves, that there's no necessity, that they can go do something else. But she never proposed what they could do. And there was only one real decision that any fair and honest judge would have made at the midway point of the trial, which is that there's been no there should be a directed verdict immediately of not guilty by reason of necessity. However, that's not what Commissioner Joseph did. He said he wanted to write up his own decision, come back in a week on Monday. The trial was last Tuesday and Wednesday. And he's going to give it to us at 11:30, tell us what's cooking with his verdict. Now, I frankly think he's got to find at least Larry Templeton guilty, not because Templeton, the founder of Camp Paradise, is guilty, but because there are political necessities here. If he finds four necessity defense not guilty verdicts, it sends a message to the police department and the city that there is a real possibility that it is, in fact, okay to sleep somewhere outside if you're not violating other laws, which is, of course, what Sugar and Crone tried to pass 3 years ago when Catherine Byers was breaking her commitments to the progressive community about ending sleeping ban in 1998. And then, of course, Sugar and Crone backpedaled madly, and now they have a majority, but they won't even talk about the issue. But there has to be a legal place for people to go. And if Irwin Joseph finds that the necessity defense holds for all four people, the message politically will be pretty clear, at least in his court, that you cannot arrest people and expect a conviction unless you have offered them some other place to go. And there isn't any other place to go for 90% of the homeless population. Now, of course, what the city can do, if it's smart, here I am advising the city on how to screw over the homeless. Police officers, take out your notebooks. City council members, turn on your dictaphones here. You just leave a few spaces in the armory open for the police to go around and break up encampments it doesn't like. And then the police can go in and say, hey, there's a space open, you have to go up there. But of course, since it's on a first-come, first-served basis, the police can't guarantee that there will be a space. And of course, there often isn't. And during rainy weather, it's almost not only packed, where the armory is a 75-person capacity, they go over capacity to help out people. Sometimes they go up to 100. I think the biggest was 125, 136. There's been some wild claims by Rotkin and Kennedy, I believe, that this is up to 200, but that's never been documented as far as I know. In fact, I'm almost sure that that's more of their fanciful statistics that have nothing to do with reality, but simply serve a political purpose, which is covering their asses when they should be changing the law and respecting the Constitution. They're simply playing to the conservatives on the West Side and explaining themselves to the progressives that they lied to get into office, and that they're continuing to lie to maintain political support for. Kennedy is still in office, Rotkin is gone, and I want to say about Kennedy that while he has this extremely bad record, he is now, along with Councilmember Premack, and I guess to some extent Councilmember Porter, defending a very small group of homeless people, the Camp Paradise homeless people. That's 35 to 50 people now, maybe a few more as the rains hit, maybe a few less, I'm not sure. But in terms of his broader support for homeless people, when he came to power, he was this big resource center for nonviolence, guided by Gandhi, liberal guy, you know, progressive fellow. Within a year, that all fell away. Within 3 years, he authored the most repressive laws in California around homeless people downtown, called the Downtown Ordinances. He banned begging, in essence. He made it illegal to beg after dark. Peacefully beg. We're not talking about abusively beg. Any request for money verbally presented after dark or anything of value, food, is now illegal in Santa Cruz. First offense, $162 fine. Second offense, up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine. Scott Kennedy. Yes, you got it. Mr. Palestinian Rights himself can't get it together to get rights for homeless people. Now, as I said, recently he supported rights for a small group of people, I should say, a program for a small group of people, the Camp Paradise people, where he and Premack and Porter seem to be looking to say, look, let's leave these people alone until we can get them something to serve them. And there's something on the City Council agenda Tuesday, day after tomorrow, at the 3 o'clock session. But you have to come at 2:30, folks, if you want to talk on homeless issues generally, because oral communications, normally held at 7 o'clock, is at 2:30 on Tuesday at the City Council meeting. Why is this? It's to make sure nothing discourages, disparages, or detracts from the crowning of King Crone, who will be, unless there's some unusual upset, the new mayor of Santa Cruz after November 28th. He's the mayor... He's the vice mayor now. He'll be the mayor elected not by the people, of course, but by the city council. And the likely vice mayor is Emily, get rid of the homeless at Harvey West and clear them off the riverbanks, Riley, the woman whose bakery I and others picketed, urging her, why does she vote against the poor people, asking people to think about that and talk to her about it. She never called back on those issues, of course. She doesn't do that. She doesn't call back. Not to homeless activists. Not for the whole year. So there are two things coming up tomorrow. I've kind of given this long. It was going to be a brief announcement. It's turned into a 25-minute harangue, but I hope you got some information out of it here. The Monday at 11:30 a.m., the verdicts are announced in the Camp Paradise trial. And after the verdicts, I guess HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work with, is going to be having a kind of a meeting. We'll probably meet, I would guess at the Santa Cruz Diner. If you can't afford coffee, come on down. I'll try and do that for you if you're interested in these issues. We're looking to, HUF is looking to determine what to do for the winter, because we have a situation where nothing is on the agenda about suspending the sleeping and camping bans. Nothing is on the agenda about expanding any kind of shelter. And Camp Paradise, which is finally, you know, it may be getting some recognition, it's on the agenda Tuesday. And as I said, that what's happening on the agenda Tuesday is 2:30 oral communications. And then sometime after 3, probably around 3:30 or 4, but you better come early to be sure, Camp Paradise comes back on the agenda with a report from, I guess, an Ed Porter has put an item on. I read about it. I read the item verbatim last Bathrobes Piers Broadsides last Thursday when I did this show. It's the consideration of the depot site for a possible campground area in addition to as a possible De La Vega, Harvey West and San Lorenzo Benchlands are the areas that the city council staff is supposedly, quote, investigating. Of course, they were told to investigate these areas a month ago, and they still haven't come back with a report, and there's no report on the city council agenda yet. So apparently, while they're just going to continue investigating away, which is good, I suppose, in that Camp Paradise is trying to maintain itself in the midst of these horrendous storms and so forth. But there's always a danger that as the river rises, either the city council and police will use this as a pretext to remove people, or the river will actually rise so high, which happens every 3 to 20 years, depending on who you talk to, that Camp Paradise may have to evacuate itself. Anyway, this is on the agenda. Simply a report back from the staff, in addition to the staff to look into the depot site, a statement that they cannot use as a camping area, the Coral and River Street Highway 1 corner area, where they had previously thought, I guess it had been discussed at City Council a little bit, they would not only locate the headquarters for the Santa Cruz Service Corps, which is the group that's going to be kind of a non-profit group that's agreed to set up a conservation-style domestic service corps in Santa Cruz, where Camp Paradise and other groups can camp for limited periods of time and then clean up the environment around them and move through the greenbelt doing the work that the city is unable to pay its workers because it doesn't have the money, it says. Of course, it doesn't mind paying $7 million for an overrun for the police department and tossing $17 million to Mercy Charities Housing to build less housing than they're tearing down. But they don't have the money to clean up the greenbelt. And, of course, the greenbelt fanatics don't want homeless people camping in the greenbelt either. Anywhere, and they don't propose other places, most of them. Some of them do, very few of them. Scott Graham, the only environmentalist I know of who has actually proposed alternate places for homeless people to camp and has spoken about those places at City Council, but people like Patricia Medicek, Bruce Van Allen, Celia Scott, they don't mind sabotaging greenbelt use by a homeless group that actually is cleaning up areas like Camp Paradise, but they haven't got anything public to say about setting up real campgrounds. That's environmentalism for birds and for plants and for snails, but not for human beings. Or except for those folks who are, as Becky Johnson so whimsically puts it in her article, users of polo ponies or joggers who are going through the Poganip. They can marvel at the wonderful wilderness areas around them while the homeless people get arrested, cleared off, or scared away. And that's, unfortunately, the story. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse. This is your twice-weekly Civil Rights in Santa Cruz show, your opportunity to speak on these issues, shriek on these issues, or groan on these issues, is here, 427-3772. We've been 6.5 years on the air without a license, and we license ourselves. We get our justification from you out there in the community. We do, I think, provide service for people who need to express things that you can't get on the commercial media, and we function as a real source of information as distinguished from a source of propaganda for the administration's latest genocidal or suicidal efforts to proceed with business as usual. Again, to me, it's for the few, not for the many. But as promised, we have the Veterans Hall Thanksgiving dinner coming up, and numerous interviews that happened then. So that's what we're up to now. Call in if you'd like. I will still be in and around the studio while we're playing this tape. And if you've got important comments to make, or even unimportant comments, we may actually break into the tape without damaging it in any way or violating the law and put you on the air to talk about what your thoughts are. Stay with us.
So, November 20th, 2001, about 11 o'clock, the doors of Department 1 are opening. The bailiff has opened them. And in the corridors, we have Deputy City Attorney...
Naturally, a little ahead of myself. But actually, what we're listening to here is perhaps just as interesting. This is Camp Paradise trial, and we couldn't actually get into the court to record the trial. I was in the court. I didn't make a motion to record the trial as I usually do, which anyone can do, by the way. You just get the little paper from the clerk beforehand, bring your little tape recorder with you, and say you want to make a recording for private use, and they can... they often grant that. They should grant it every time. You can also make a recording for broadcast, which is a little more difficult to do, but that can be done as well if you're working with a broadcasting company like the Free Radio. We're not a company, we're just a collective. But or if you're requiring a recording for an article you're doing for a newspaper or a story, or for your own personal use. Anyway, you get the papers, you record, but in this case, I didn't have to do that because for the first time, as I mentioned before, this homeless trial is being recorded by the court itself with court equipment, with tapes to be made available to the defense. That is, Attorney Paul Sanford and his four clients, Larry, Kay, Squirrel, and, goodness, Randy. Those are the four people who are involved in the trial. So there's actually going to be a tape available. I'm hoping to have a copy of it by next Thursday. We'll be playing parts of it on the air for broadcast, unless I hear that I'll be arrested for doing so by the commissioner, in which case I'll have to make a choice on that one. Maybe we can get a motion passed on that one. And let's hear some of the gabble about the court, and then we'll go into the Veterans Hall Day stuff. I should say into the Thanksgiving Day stuff in front of the Veterans Hall, where that tasty meal was served, the one meal of the year, which helps all the liberals sleep a little better the 363 days.
Pouchot talking to City Homeless Services Police Officer Eric Seeley. We have Homes on Wheels activist David Allen. Say hello, David.
Morning, Robert.
Laura Tucker, former Homeless Issues Task Force staffer, and David Beck, who actually wrote a story, probably the only person in town who's written a story about this in today's Mercury News. Hello, David.
Good morning.
Conferring in the hallway, we have Reglock Grunike and attorney Matthew, do you know Matthew's last name?
Williamson.
Williamson, thank you. And we're all piling into court. Here's David Fapp, formerly a defendant, still a Camp Paradise resident. And Jessica Lloyd-Rogers, Good Times reporter, and Paul Brindell, Community Action Board activist, in the hallway. It's about 3:20, and we're at the county courthouse, actually walking back toward it. Break in the afternoon. Larry Templeton has just finished testifying in the camping trial. Now it has become four defendants. Previously it was the Paradise Eight. Three were acquitted, charges dismissed before trial. Actually, one didn't show up. And now we have the trial of Kay, Squirrel, Larry, and I guess Randy, those four, if I'm not mistaken. And the defense is putting on its case. Witnesses have been Paul Brindell, Community Action Board, Ken Cole, head of the Homeless Service Center, who disappointed me by not not taking the opportunity to denounce the camping ban or even the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. We're here with the county famous reporter Sarah Phelan of the Metro. Sarah, what is your prediction about the outcome of this trial? Stop staring at my tape recorder. Answer the question. She's smiling and peering at the machine. She's saying nothing. Jerry Henry, what's your analysis?
Unpredictable.
There we go.
Great Grenade speaks.
That not only.
And they police questioned the door and made those teenagers walk the night. And one of the teenage girls was raped.
Grenade is speaking afterward to the court is recess.
Not that they wanted to rape, but that it was more important to make sure that the city use permit and camping policies were adhered to than that public safety. And we saw the city attorney insist the city has no duties to protect the safety. But what she's wrong in law is that they don't have a duty to provide safety, but they do have a duty under the 14th Amendment to provide equal protection. When they protect the rich, and they do, they have to protect the poor, and they don't.
Tomorrow,
see you next week.
Which restaurant are you talking about? Las Charlie's.
Yes.
Las Charlie's.
And they had a policy of allowing selected homeless people, especially teenage runaways, to sleep overnight in their facility. Against the use permit.
Right.
The city police broke down the doors, forced the teenage kids to walk the night. One of the teenage girls was raped. That's the consequence of putting the enforcement of use permits and camping bans over human safety. And the city knows that, they do that, and what's really at stake here, as you guys pointed out, is that the enforcement of these laws is done in order to go ahead and please certain constituencies of their votership that do not want the homeless to be able to live in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to make of a week to figure this out. I mean, I expected he was just going to rule. I mean, what's he going
to
do?
He has to work out a justification. He's going to give a written ruling. That's what he said he was going to do.
How come? He knows how he's going to rule now. Hey, Larry. Matt said
we're out here on the steps of the courthouse after the trial of the Paradise Four. We have Metro reporter Sarah Phelan and attorney Paul Sanford is coming out.
She's there 3 days with no notice.
So, Paul, what do you predict? You're going to win this case?
I can't make a prediction, but I will not be surprised at all if it's a mixed decision and we get some convicted and others not. That would not surprise me.
I'm going to come back on Monday the 26th at 1:30. Sarah, you've been following this for the Metro for some time. Is this a newsworthy trial? Do you feel you spent your time well today?
Sure. It's very interesting.
And I know that you've been giving a lot of focus to Camp Paradise. Do you think this has implications for the 1,000, 2,000 other homeless people that don't get much news coverage in the Metro?
In the Metro or in any newspaper, do you mean?
It's correct as well, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think it does have implications, but it depends what they decide.
And what do you predict as a decision?
I think that I would be very surprised if it's the whole thing comes out in their favor because of what that would mean.
In fact, the closing argument of the city attorney, Jennifer Pouchot, was that if you do this, you're going to unleash the homeless all over the state. Was that an appeal to bigotry, Attorney Sanford?
I think there were a lot of arguments.
Bigotry and fear, perhaps?
I was concerned about a lot of the closing argument of as Mr. Williamson characterizes her, the government's lawyer, of bringing in evidence that didn't exist and presenting this old magnet theory, and there's going to be big consequences if you apply the law, Judge. That's scary to me. You know, this is not about the big picture. It's about the narrow picture of whether they proved the case and then whether we proved our defense. It's not about anything else. That's how the system works. So that was a political appeal, and she's got a right to say it, but bigoted, I don't know, but frustrating, inappropriate, absurd, sure.
If you lose this case, is there an appeal process here?
Yeah, there's an appeal process, but I don't know exactly how it would work, and I'm too tired to think about it.
All right, we'll talk to you when you've gotten some sleep,
right,
which is criminal for many in this city. All right, so it's about 5:10. We're talking to defendant Larry Templeton. The case is over. We don't know what the decision will be until next Monday. How do you feel the trial went?
I think it went good. I really do. We proved that they didn't know what they were talking about, the Eichhorn law. She didn't know what it talked about. We proved every point of it.
Yeah, I thought actually that your attorney, Matthew...
Williams.
Williamson?
Yeah, I think that was right.
He was good, and of course Paul Sanford did, frankly, much better than I expected.
Yes.
Very articulate. He kind of kept control of things very well. And he went through the six elements of the necessity defense, so much of them, I think everybody in the courtroom will eventually remember that defense.
Yes.
What's happening out at the camp? It's getting colder, days are getting shorter, weather's getting wetter.
We're getting more tarps. We got two space heaters now for the big camp area. So if people do get wet in the nighttime, they can't come to the main camp area and climb in where the heaters are. We got lanterns for every tent that we can afford. And we're hoping we can do more. Sterno cans are working. You know, you take a little sterno can, you put it in your tent for a while, and it warms it right up.
How about the situation with, how many people are at Camp Paradise now?
About 35.
And that's kind of a low number. It used to be quite a bit more, right?
It used to be more. We had a lot of people, just like I told from the beginning, they come and they go. We have a lot of travelers that come in, like that one group that put us up there close to 50. They came in at abundance, I mean, more than what I ever saw in my life.
Still doing Sunday services?
Yes, we are.
Is Jeff showing up?
Yes, he is.
He's a reverend from
San Jose. Yes.
How about this proposed Santa Cruz Service Corps?
The Santa Cruz Service Corps, we joined together with Pleasure Point Night Fighters. We got together with them last Saturday, and we did a very big cleanup. We started from Highway 1, and we went clear to the ocean. Along the river.
How many people contributed to that?
There was about 45 of us. The camp, the Pleasure Fighters had 15, 20 people, and we had 25 people.
Now, the city council failed to bring back anything on the agenda at the last meeting. So Larry, city council comes back into session a week from Tuesday, which is a week from today.
Yes.
Any indication that have they sought any outreach at Camp Paradise for these three proposed places, De La Vega Park, Harvey West, and the San Lorenzo Benchlands, which they're investigating as campsites?
Not yet. No, I haven't been approached with them yet.
Excuse us.
And we interrupt this tape to actually bring you live on his bicycle, the notorious Larry Templeton. Hey, Larry.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
So what are you doing? You're bicycling around. Have you gone crazy?
Yeah, I'm up here looking at the river, right up here by the San Lorenzo Park, down by the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up here to see what the river looks like.
So how are things looking for the river? Is it rising much?
No. We were supposed to have 3 to 5 inches. The river didn't even come close to the camp. That's what I think they were hoping for.
Now, how about tents? Did any tents get blown away? Or?
No, a few of them got wet, but... We got more tarps, so they ain't going to get wet next rain.
So how was the rain? Was it kind of a grueling experience for some, or what do you think?
No, this is just an everyday thing, you know. It didn't bother none of us.
Hmm.
A few of them that got wet, you know, they were kind of miserable for a little bit, but like everything else, you get over it.
So how many folks you got at the camp now?
We're about 43 people.
And have you had any support? Did anybody come down during the rain, swim in, or kind of wade in through
We had the Quakers come down to see us. The Green Party come down to see us.
And when did they come?
From the neighborhood. Uh-huh. They came to see us.
This was like in the last day or two?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we had the biggest Thanksgiving you'd ever even think of for people being homeless.
Tell us about that.
Well, we had six 20-pound turkeys, about 15 different kinds of pies and cakes. We had our cranberry sauce. We had ham. We had sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, gravy, fried potatoes, baked potatoes. Let me see, what else we had? We had 4 different kinds of salads and 3 different kinds of breads.
Wow. And did any turkeys from the city council or police force show up?
None.
I see. Well, and you know, you're on the agenda for Tuesday. You know about that?
Yeah.
That's on the 3:00 agenda, but you have to be there at 2:30 if you want to speak at oral communications on homeless issues generally.
Right.
What do you see coming down the pike, Larry?
Well, I hope they go ahead and roll into the couple sites they've been talking about. I'm not for sure on the sites yet, but you know they don't want to make themselves look bad by just coming in closing this camp out, because every time they tell us about a cleanup, we go do it. Mm-hmm. You know, then we have the community center or the information center downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, last night they sent two people to us.
The downtown host sent you how many people?
They sent two. Young couple. Mm-hmm. Even sent a letter with them.
Really?
Please help these people. No one else in Santa Cruz would.
Save that letter.
No, I got the letter and I got their card.
Excellent. Yeah, I'd like to get a copy of that letter. Now, there's also been some... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're sure more welcome to it. Anybody wants to see anything, we got... They're more welcome to.
So, unlike the city council, you're keeping all your documents public, eh?
Oh, yeah. If anybody wants to look at anything to go on about the camp, they can come right into our office, which is right at the camp, and you can go through any file you want. You're more welcome to, except for the personal files about your medical history.
Mm-hmm. Now, at
that, you're more welcome to.
That's great. At 1:30 on Tuesday, the city council meets in closed session to discuss your case, Larry Temple. Do you know what's going on with that?
No, I don't.
Well, you have a right to be there before they start their discussions if you're interested, along with Paul Sanford, if you want to make a statement to them, although it doesn't go out, I mean, it will be recorded, but it doesn't go out to the, it isn't televised. I want to let you know you have that opportunity. 1:30, and it's not in the city council chambers, it's in the city manager's conference room, which is right next to the city council chambers.
Okay, I'll have to be there since they're talking about me.
They're talking about you, but of course, the only thing you get to do is you get to make a statement beforehand to them, and then they go into private session. Then they will report on that, at their 3 o'clock session. And as I said, oral communications and what seems very complicated, strange, new processes at 2:30, right at the beginning of the redevelopment agency meeting and also the city council. The other thing I wanted to ask you was Dan Hopkins, who's a local activist who did his own organizing 5 years ago to save the Coral Street open-air shelter unsuccessfully, but quite militantly, he says that he's concerned that he, as a labor-ready worker, was told that next week their labor-ready people are being told that they are going to be cleaning up campsites along the San Lorenzo River. Do you think they're thinking of your campsite?
No, they ain't thinking of our camp. They've already hit a couple camps on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
They cleaned out half the other side of the river, and if they're talking about labor-ready again, they're talking about the same side of the river cleaning the rest of it up.
That was the so-called Heroin Alley area on the other side?
Yeah, right across the river from us.
Have you gotten many refugees from across the river coming to Camp Paradise and saying they haven't?
None.
What's happening, in your view, with the rest of the homeless population? Are they suffering an increased crackdown by the police and the Parks and Rec?
No, they all know the police do this every year at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than what it was last year when they did this crackdown. The only thing different this year is there's a Camp Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they even busted my camp at this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're wanting something to whine about, they're whining the wrong things or saying the wrong stories, because this happens every year. They know it. They knew when the rains start, their camps get hassled by the cops. Every year, all over the city of Santa Cruz, Felton, Watsonville, we all get hassled.
But why should the police go after camps this time of the year? I mean, there's no extra need to, is there?
No, they just want to make it rougher on us. That's all the police are doing. They have no reason to even hassle the homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
unless they're messing up. You know, like some of the dirty camps we went into when we did our river cleanup with Pleasure Point.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, we joined with their group of doing a river cleanup from Highway 1 clear to the ocean. We ran into some camps that there was needles, beer cans, alcohol bottles, and cans ripped in half, used as cookers, laid all over the place. Right down here, right where, if you're standing in the courthouse where I went to court at,
mm-hmm.
if you would have looked right out the window, you could have seen the heroin camp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could see it with your plain old eyes. You didn't have to use a pair of binoculars or nothing.
Well, let me ask you this, Larry. I've often said, and I wonder if you think it's true, that if it weren't illegal to camp, if there were actually legal places for people to go,
uh-huh.
at least a greater number of people that now camp carelessly and indifferently and illegally would kind of spruce things up. Do you think that's true or not?
Yeah, they would.
I mean,
yes, they would. I think if they would try to work with the homeless group a little bit, they would see a change, not just in the ones that's wanting to be clean, but they'd even see a change in the users, you know? If you ain't have nothing to live for, you're just going to say, well, F is just it's just another day. Mm-hmm. But if they got something to look forward to, it really changes the outlook on their life.
What's the situation regarding folks who have left their homes because of rent problems? I know that some people joined your camp in the last couple months because they literally moved out of their homes because they had rent difficulties.
The rent kept getting raised on them, yes.
Is that still happening?
Yeah. Hey, how you guys doing? They're still raising the rent here in Santa Cruz. They're raising it so high that people can't even afford to live in this town.
Are you seeing more people coming into camp, or that's...
So the landlord used the excuse, I sold the building, the people want you out. When the people moved out, came to Camp Paradise, our attorney went ahead and did some investigation. The man that was so called to sell his apartment complex, he didn't sell it. He still owns it. He rented the apartment for $400 and some more than what he was charging them.
You know the name of the man, the location of the apartment?
It was on, I ain't got the address with me. I got it at the office.
Okay. Let us have it at some point.
And up there off of Mission Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fourplex apartment complex up there.
Mm-hmm.
Guy still owns it.
Has Emily Riley or any council member contacted Camp Paradise, let's say Ed Porter, who has this item on the agenda, to talk with you about what's coming up on the agenda?
No, not yet, no.
Have any members of the staff of the city supposedly charged with investigating the campsites at De La Vega Park, Harvey West, and I guess the San Lorenzo Benchlands as possible new campsites for a roaming Camp Paradise? Have they talked to you yet?
None of them's come and talk to us.
So,
even when they were saying they were looking for pieces of land, they don't come and talk to us.
What
we talk to is our attorney when he comes down and says, hey, we ain't got to worry, the police ain't coming. You know, and the only time we find out anything is if we go to city council or if we hear it from you or Becky or the other people that's trying to help us.
Mm-hmm. Now, what?
You know, the city council, they just, I don't know. I think they need to learn what caring for the U.S. citizens is all about.
Hmm. Well, it could be that they're afraid you're a terrorist training camp down there. Is that possible?
Terrorist training camp, only if they push us that far. You know?
Right.
Terrorists, what are we going to do? Hurt them with words? No, we're going to hurt them with the truth.
Yeah, well, it seems to me, as I've been saying on the show, that the real terrorists are the people that are threatening folks who are just trying to shelter themselves. You know?
Exactly. That's what I call terrorists. They talk about the dude across the seas, Bin Laden or whatever his name is.
Osama Bin Laden, yeah.
Yeah, they talk about him because he killed a lot of people. Well, what is this city council going to do this winter when they end up with hundreds of dead homeless people because they don't have no roof to cover their heads?
Or at least some. I know last year there were 41 dead people in the county.
41 dead last year because of overexposure. You know what? The city council is doing the same thing old Bin Laden's doing. He's killing our U.S. citizens.
Yeah, if he is, they haven't gotten him into a trial, and we'll probably never know much of the truth about that one.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. What was your thought? You've just gotten through a trial. We're talking with Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise on his cellular phone as he roams about on his bicycle. Anything out there that you want to note on that's going on there?
Well, it's awful quiet today. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The rain didn't hurt nothing. Made everything turn a little bit more darker green.
That's what I like to see. What about any comments on the trial? Anything that sticks in your mind now that you're kind of waiting for the verdict?
I'm an ex-felon. Yeah, there's lots that sticks in my mind about their trial. For one, I want to thank Paul Sanford personally and Mark that came in and testified Paul. He came in and did a very good job.
You're talking about Matthew, right? Matthew Williamson?
Matthew, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The lawyer proved, not just Officer Seeley. Officer Seeley stated in his testimony under oath, I ticketed Mr. Templeton. He also stated that he followed me, that I followed them to their camp where they were issuing other tickets. Escalante, Officer Escalante, whatever his name is.
Sergeant Escalante?
Yeah. Well, his name's on the ticket. He said, under oath, they offered Mr. Templeton affordable housing. Okay, that's what he testified to. They offered me affordable housing. My attorney asked him, what is affordable housing to me? The cop couldn't answer it.
Did he, in fact...
Ain't that a lie under oath?
Sergeant Escalante, our police force would never do such a thing as lie under oath.
Oh, no, but it's on the court record for them. Everybody in the city of Santa Cruz, look at your two officers, Seeley and Escalante. That's only two that I'm going to prove. Then we're going to come to three more that I'm going to prove, and maybe Santa Cruz will come back the way it's supposed to be.
Now, normally on Sundays you have a religious ceremony. Have you been kind of rained out on that one?
Oh, no. It happens every Sunday. I'm just riding down this road trying to get back there, and all these cars keep wanting to run me off the road.
Uh-huh.
Tell them, if they're listening to the radio, tell them to quit trying to run me over.
Yeah, stop trying to run over Larry Templeton. He has a religious mission.
I'm the guy with the cowboy hat, everybody. I'm just riding the road here.
We've heard, incidentally, of people from the camp getting ticketed for signing on...
Yeah, some of them go out on the street and sign to keep themselves with a little bit of cigarette money, the ones that ain't working.
Explain what signing is, Larry.
They stand on a street corner and ask for any donations, any spare change, and they've been ticketed. Well, the other day, we had a lady, her and her husband, they're from Louisiana, they come to our camp, they had no money, so they went out signing the other day. He was sitting on the sidewalk over there by Denny's, and she was out in the media, okay?
In the median?
Well, in the media, we'll get you a ticket for signing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I try to tell them they don't have to do, but they still do it because they need things for themselves. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't out in the media, but he got a ticket yesterday.
Well,
ticket for having a smart ass attitude was what the cops said. Becky had pictures of it, I guess.
That's video journalist Becky Johnson with her ever-present video camera.
Yeah, she was there and caught it all on tape. They didn't give the girl a ticket for signing that was in the middle of the street, which they could have.
Mm-hmm.
They gave the guy sitting on the sidewalk a ticket because they don't like him.
I see. Well, are you suggesting the police are personally interpreting or misinterpreting the law to fit their own preconceptions and prejudices?
I think they all need to go back to school, 95% of them. You know, they got a few good officers that really work with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a couple cops downtown. When I was down there last night riding around looking for kids, he said, I don't know why they just don't leave you guys alone. You know, I hear that from quite a few police officers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they don't want to come down and hassle, I even had a dog catcher down there yesterday. The dog catcher said he'd love to move down here and get out of his house.
Well, hey, I'm not going to make any recommendations on the air about that.
Well, you know, people want to keep making complaints about different things, and it's getting silly. Camp Paradise is here to help the city of Santa Cruz with their homeless problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to help with their garbage problem. You know, why don't the city council quit worrying about how much money they're going to spend, because they ain't going to spend a damn dime. We've never asked them for nothing yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot to say this. When they said, does the city of Santa Cruz owe me anything? The city of Santa Cruz owes everybody in this town one thing. That's their police force to provide safety for us. And that's what they owe us.
I hear you.
They don't owe me no money. Mm-hmm. They don't owe me no house. They don't owe me none of that.
Right.
But the cop does owe me my safety.
Well,
and if they won't give me my safety, I guess I got to get it myself.
Now, is the camp still running with a council? Do you still have a council
we do.
You still have Thursday 8 o'clock meetings?
Yes, we do.
Those are open to the public, right? The 8
yes,
o'clock meeting?
Yeah.
And that's down there at 8 in the evening on Thursday.
Yeah. We changed it from 7 to 8 because we have a few people working full-time jobs that just started, and I don't want to interrupt their jobs, so we give another hour for them to get home.
Anything you want to add? I guess you'll be at the court tomorrow at 11:30 in the morning to hear the verdict, right?
Yes, I will.
And we'll be having a Huff meeting thereafter. You're welcome to join us at the Santa Cruz Diner if you want to come on in.
If anybody out there wants to make a small donation of not money, not clothing, but any kind of cooking fuel, white gas, Coleman fuel, or kerosene, we would sure appreciate it very much.
And somebody to call on that if you want to kind of arrange for somebody to pick it up, if you don't want to take it down to the camp, because I imagine the paths are kind of muddy.
They ain't as muddy as what people think they are.
No, really? They're passable?
Oh, yes. Very passable.
Huh.
We had one of the Quaker ladies, which she's an elderly lady. She had no problem walking down there.
Well, I'll have to wander on down and see what I can do.
Yeah.
But if people want to give a call to Carl Wilson of Friends of Camp Paradise, he's within a block or two of Camp Paradise, and he can...
No, he's about a block from us.
I think he's at 137 Felker, is that right?
137 Felker Street.
And that's...
He takes a lot of donations in if people don't want to bring him to camp personally. And if anybody needs a note stating that you donated the stuff, our church from San Jose is going to be leaving us some papers. That's a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. And if you want to write this fuel off your taxes, we'll be more than happy to help you.
And if you want to give Carl a call to arrange just to get more information, his number is 425-4787. Again, Carl Wilson, Friends of Camp Paradise at 425-4787. And Larry, do you want me to put out your number? I haven't been able to reach you on the phone the last couple
of
times.
Yeah, well, the phone's going to be activated all the time now. There ain't going to be no more problems with the phone.
So do you want me to put it out, or would you rather have people contact Carl?
Go ahead and put my number out if they want to contact me.
Well, you can catch it.
831-278-9904.
So locally, that's 278-9904, and you can get Larry Templeton.
If you need good workers, they can call that number, too.
So if you're looking for people to do some work, give a call to that number. They're interested in getting some work, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, we don't ask for nothing for free. We're willing to work for it.
And the current cost per day per camp member is $2 for food and such?
Yeah, that helps out buying the fuel and stuff, that, you know, and food, milk, cereal, mm-hmm. stuff that we don't want to ask the people to give to us, because that's what this camp ain't about. Mm-hmm. The camp's supposed to be self-sufficient, and since the police made it this way, I guess we've been asking a lot of the public for a lot of help, and I want to thank every one of you for it.
Also, I guess your service, your religious service, you're 3 minutes late for your noon service there, Larry.
They'll wait for me. I'll be there.
All right.
I'm on my way. I'm just right about 2 blocks from home now.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time to both
talk. I appreciate you calling me. I got kind of bored sitting here. I had no one to talk to.
I'm going to charge you next time.
Uh-oh. Hey, that's all right.
Hey, thank you, Larry.
Okay. I want to thank everybody out there that has been listening to Robert's show and giving us your support. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
God bless every one of you. And we do have one more thing happening that Camp Paradise is going to put on without the public. We're going to put on a toy drive.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to every kid in this town that don't have a toy. We're going to give them toys and bicycles.
Wow.
We're going to find them ourselves.
What about us old kids?
Hey, we got bicycles for you guys, too.
Hey, all right. Well,
anybody that don't have a family to spend Christmas with, we're offering our family. We're going to have the world's biggest tree, and we're going to be driving around an old 65 Chevy pickup, Christmas lights and a Christmas tree on top of it, just for the kids.
Now you're talking.
Hey, we're big kids ourselves. We're still riding bicycles, having fun.
Hey. Thank you, Larry. And
thank you, Robert.
Talk to you again and see you probably tomorrow at court.
Okay.
All right.
I hope so, buddy. And if any supporters or anybody that wants to kind of give us a leaning shoulder for Monday, we sure appreciate it.
I'll pass that on.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Larry.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And that was Larry Templeton at Camp Paradise. You can reach him by phone if you want to at 278-9904, although I guess he's going to be doing a service down there shortly. He'll be at court, as will I and bunches of other people, hopefully, on Monday, tomorrow, at 11:30 in the morning, to hear the verdict of Joseph Irwin, the commissioner, or Irwin Joseph, actually, last name is Joseph, who will be ruling on the Camp Paradise 4 camping trial and the necessity defense that they had to break the camping law because they had no other choice in terms of any place to go, in terms of the need to sleep and to protect themselves from the elements. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Our lines are open, and if you want to donate gas to Camp Paradise, if I understand that properly, I'm not quite sure. I'm going to get that. I think it's white. Is it kerosene? White fuel? I'll give a call to Carl Wilson for the specifics. He's the Friends of Camp Paradise expert. I do a lot of gas, but it's mostly... verbal gas. He, however, can give you some of the nuts and bolts and tell you what is needed down there. 425-4787. 425-4787. If you miss these numbers, you can give a call to HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. She has a very easy number, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, at 423-4833. And there's a long recorded message that has virtually all these numbers on the message. Just have your pencil and paper ready and take it from there. We're going to get back to the interview at the courthouse, then go to Thanksgiving Day for the broader homeless community and catch what's been happening generally as we listen more to some tapes recorded last week.
And I guess the question then is, what about this? Is there a proposal? Are you actually seriously thinking of moving into the building on River and Coral Street, or just using that as a headquarters?
The headquarters.
Because I had heard a rumor that Paulie and Tom Shaver were actually talking about proposing that as an actual site for a removal of people from Camp Paradise.
They're proposing that on emergency situation, is what I understand.
But not as something you're about to do, or?
Well, if it's the only place we got where we can quit these tickets and these court things, hey, we can build from there.
So it is. Yeah. It is actually a possibility.
It is a possibility. You know, we're open for anything. If it's gonna stop these cops from writing those tickets and harassing us, and if it says we gotta go to Coral Street where we can, I got you, where we don't get harassed anymore, then you know what? We're gonna go to Coral Street.
Let me take that.
Any further interaction with Scott Kennedy or Mark Premack, anybody like that, council?
No, not yet.
What do you hear about people in other campsites? Is there much police crackdown going on?
They went to the other side of the river last week or earlier this week with the labor-ready people, and they destroyed the whole side of the river.
What did they give tickets to people or just destroy their property?
They just destroyed everything.
And you got some people came and talked to you about that?
Yes, they did.
How many people talked to you about that?
Four.
And what are they doing now? What was destroyed of their property?
They've lost all their tents, their sleeping gear. They've lost everything that they had set up as camps. All their clothing, they've lost everything.
And does this include men and women, or?
Yes, men and women.
How many people do you think were affected by that sweep?
Maybe 10 or more.
Heard of anything about the actions in the Poconip?
I've been hearing they've been hitting the Poconip pretty hard.
And how about seizure of vehicles in the Harvey West?
I've been hearing they're going to start hitting them, too. I heard one guy, he got sighted, then he had his vehicle towed away.
I heard that Ed Meneses of Homes on Wheels had his vehicle towed.
We'll go get this truck right.
Okay. What did you think of the trial, Ben?
I thought it went well. I think our attorneys represented the campers well.
Yeah, I thought they spoke very well. Any particular reactions to anything that happened, or any surprises at the trial, anything you particularly noticed? You've been living at the camp now with Larry for, what, since January?
Well, what do you mean surprises?
Anything that, you know, stuck out in your mind about the court, anything you were going to remember today?
Well, I think the prosecuting side didn't show any evidence.
Yeah, were you expecting them to present a stronger case?
Well, I would imagine they would have.
Well, yeah, they turned in someone who didn't even know that she had the right to reply. Shall I walk you to the car? They actually turned, the deputy city attorney apparently didn't know she had the right to do a, she does a concluding argument, then your attorneys, I should say, Camp Paradise, or Larry, and the attorneys for the four defendants do a concluding, and then she has the right to do a final concluding, and I think she didn't even realize that.
I don't know the law too much, you know.
You recognize this man who's kneeling down and blocking traffic?
Oh, yeah,
there?
It's Officer Seeley.
You think we should arrest him for obstructing a roadway?
Oh, I don't know. I know he probably would do the same thing for us.
Well, we should return the favor. I'm going to go get my bag. Anything you want to conclude with?
I don't know.
You look happier than before.
I guess we'll see on the 26th what happens. Hopefully the judge has a heart and the guts to make the right decision.
Don't hope too hard.
Well, I know my God's stronger than the law, so.
There you go. Thank you, Pam.
Indeed, we'll find out the outcome of the Camp Paradise trial tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. in the Department 1 of the Santa Cruz County Courthouse. Be there if you're interested, and follow it on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides Thursday 6 to 8 in the evening when this show returns, if you can't make it there, or perhaps come to City Council on Tuesday. Tuesday at City Council, I'm going to be there at 2:30 for oral communications, and we're hoping to have some hot food there for those of you who find the weather a little frosty. There will be, as I said, be able to speak on homeless issues generally at 2:30 at At between 3 and 4, Camp Paradise will be on the agenda, and then at night, there will be no oral communication in the evening session, as usually is the case, at 7, but they will be crowning Mayor Crone, if all goes as is predicted. And that's on Tuesday, day after tomorrow, at City Council, so you might want to check that out. I promised you next, Veterans Hall's Thanksgiving Day Gobble and Gabble. Before we do that, however, we're going to skip ahead to the Huff protest. We had an actual Friday protest 2 days ago downtown. It was really more of a tabling where we were kind of getting volunteers for the winter campaign to end the sleeping ban. We picked up a few interviews from folks on the streets. We're going to start with those and then jump back to the Veterans Hall's Thanksgiving Day discussions. Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd, and we're talking with
Joseph.
And Joseph, you have a bike here with "Pennies to the Kitty" written on it. I see the downtown host is approaching Fort Old Becky over there for speaking loudly about the sleeping ban. But you yourself had Officer Richards. Was it Officer Richards? You know if his name was Richards?
I'm not sure.
An officer approached you.
He was a Spanish Orient, I believe.
I don't think that was Officer Richards. So you were over here in front of the Cinema 9?
Yeah.
Doing your usual "Pennies for the Kitty" number.
Just making the little kids happy, you know.
Soliciting without soliciting, actually. You were just sitting there with a sign, right?
No, actually, I'm not soliciting at all.
No, you just have a sign with
As
pennies.
A matter of fact, I really don't even need the sign. The sign is just written there childish, like for entertainment for the little children. It's not to draw any money. As a matter of fact, I don't care if I don't get no money. The point is that I got a little kitty out here who doesn't get all paranoid and freaked out at people. He loves people. So I figured I'd take advantage of that situation and make the little children happy when they come to the movie.
Well, what did the officer say about all this?
No, I wasn't saying this to the officer.
What did the officer say when he saw you with the kitty?
He simply informed me that I was blocking the walk a little bit.
Were you blocking the walk?
Maybe by half a foot. Yes,
I was.
That's
not blocking the walk. We're not blocking. Were you blocking it any more than we are?
Well, I didn't want to have a conversation at the time because.
Right, but he told you were blocking.
I was busy entertaining the children. So anyway, I immediately said yes, sir, and I walked away with my bicycle.
Well, I'm glad the police are keeping the area free of kitties and bicycles. I mean,
no, it's not like that. He was in his right. You know, he wasn't trying to harass me or nothing.
Oh.
It was obvious. You know,
I did
some thinking real quick, and I decided to get a small basket, which I was going to do anyway.
All right.
And I came back, and I was sitting in the same spot, and the way I'm sitting is sideways, so I'm not blocking anybody's walking by unless they want to walk into a pole.
Right.
You know, I'm right behind a pole or something like that. And a sergeant came by.
Sergeant Baker, perhaps?
A tall, white, short-haired sergeant.
Not Sergeant Baker.
He came walking by and did not even say a word to me.
I see. Well, you handled that problem very nicely, and congratulations.
Well, I like to be...
Your name is?
Joseph.
Thank you, Joseph.
I like to...
Well, you just paid a $54 camping ticket?
Yeah, I'm in a spot. I've been there for 20 years. The gentleman came down who works at the homeless, the police officer, and he told me, he says, I got to give you a ticket for camping. I don't use no fire or nothing. It's just a tarp and a hammock, and that's me. And I'm right next to Highway 1. But I'm out of the
view. When was this?
Oh, about a month ago.
Did he say there was a complaint?
No, he didn't.
Did he warn you and say you had to leave first?
No, not at all.
Did you know his name?
Yeah. I got a card right here.
All right. Yeah, apparently it was Officer Seeley who gave you this ticket, and he said that if you cleaned up the campsite, he wouldn't give you a ticket, but he gave you a ticket anyway?
Well, no. He would give me a ticket, but he...
Throw away the ticket?
It would get taken care of.
Cleaned it up. Did you ever clean it up?
It's being cleaned up.
Okay, but as of a month later, it still wasn't cleaned up.
Well, see, for him being so polite to me, I got to give at least that much respect to clean the area up.
I hear you. I appreciate that, Joseph.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you. Well, this is your first ticket in 20. This
people.
Is your first
you know
ticket
I mean?
In 20 years.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're talking.
Friend.
All right, we'll see you later.
I don't want to say anything.
No, I want to hear about this. This is discriminatory. So, what's your name?
Okay, I don't want to say anything.
Wait, but you have a group of musicians here.
Yeah, we have a group of musicians.
And I guess there are two women on guitars, woman on drum, or a man, two guys on guitars.
It was actually three males and a female.
two females earlier. We're playing. Two guitars were going. Well, one guitar was going, actually.
And
I was just holding my guitar.
In front of this, I guess, the far end of the Cooper House near Artisans. And you were trying to play under the
awning.
The awning under this abandoned. There's no blockage of anything. And what happened?
The police officers came up and just told us, you know, it was cool. You know, we didn't mind moving, but, you know,
moved out to the curb.
Yeah, we moved out. Yeah, but, you know, that's a good spot. Nobody's sitting there. Hey, we ain't bothering anybody. We're actually out of the presence of the police. You know, we're actually out of the presence of the sidewalk where we are blocking, where people could actually stand and hear us. You know, more space. We're taking up more space here than we were in there. And you know, and they came and told us we had to move because you know it's a place of business. And we asked them. Well, there doesn't seem like there's any business going on there. Well, you know, the people who own the building think it's still considered a business, and they're like, so we had to move.
But you notice that down the street there are musicians who are next to the building and actually.
But it seems like it's more organized thing. People that you know.
By the Cooper House.
Yeah, that are just playing, you know, that are playing for fun. You know, I don't mind them playing. You know, not that I don't mind them playing, but you know, they don't get any harassment, and we do. You know, they seem, you know, I say straight up, they look cleaner than we do. You know, we might not have a home and stuff.
There's a cleanness index here that is very key. Human rights for the clean only is what I say.
Yeah. Right. And we're all clean, you know. But, you know, I don't know. They're discriminating, you know. They discriminate a lot. At least they gave us a warrant, didn't give us a ticket. Right.
Thank you very much.
But still, I shouldn't have said that on there, though.
No, you said fine. Thank you very much.
I love you.
It's a bleached blonde couple from Vermont. Your name, madam?
Bridget.
Yours, Eric. And you two, have you been slumming your way? Did you fly? Did you hijack a plane to get out here? What did you do?
I actually fixed my Jeep and drove it here.
I see. You drove all the way here. So you gave millions to the oil moguls of the Middle East so that you could come out here in splendor and luxury in your four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah, we sure did.
So that's... can't be denied, can it, folks? So, now that you're here, what are you going to do next? Have you got no money? Aren't you ashamed of yourselves? You should have brought some money with you.
We're going to take action and work. We actually have money, but we would rather not go back. We have enough money to get home. Is that?
Are you afraid of Vermont in the winter? What's the truth here?
It gets damn cold there.
I fought through 23 hard winters. I want a summer.
I
want a year-round summer.
Just
one.
Any comments about any of the towns you've gone through or any experiences you've had regarding what you've seen in the United States respecting poor people or... people who are outside, homeless people?
I think every town's pretty much the same. Once the homelessness starts, people are sympathetic, and then as it carries on, people kind of like put it all on the back burner and they don't see the people anymore. Like I remember the first time I ever saw a homeless person, I felt like I definitely wanted to help them, but it's like you can only help so many.
The thrill is gone?
No, it's not gone, but you can only help so many people. And it's like, if you feel effortless because you keep walking and you keep getting asked for change, it's like you give out change and you give out change and you give out change and then you're out of change and you feel bad because you are actually out of change.
Fear of change.
But.
Yeah. There you have it. Do you have any comments?
Not really. Texas is cool. Cooler than I thought.
Yeah, we thought Texas would suck.
But you didn't get to Mississippi, did you?
Yes, we did.
How was Mississippi?
It was okay. We drove right through it to New Orleans.
Wow.
We did a trucker stop.
Huh.
Yeah. Nashville is very cool, but Memphis is not cool. Memphis wasn't very cool.
No, it's worse.
Little tips for all you would-be travelers. Actually, it's something I'd like to do is travel across the country, but this is all supposed to be about homeless stuff, so I'm just going to have to... All right, so let's hear about this. What's your name, sir?
Tom.
Tom, what's this all about? You couldn't get into the shelter because you have no ID?
Well, no, I just got fired from the shelter because I don't have ID.
Fired from the shelter? What were you doing before?
I was a lot manager. They released me suspended me because of a fight that happened between another lot manager and a client. So they said you're suspended until further notice.
You don't do heroin, that's why you can't work there, Tom.
Well, anyways, they let me go because I don't have ID. And I told the director, Linda, I even showed her a receipt from the DMV. I said, my ID's on the way. She says, okay, you can't work and until you get your ID. And I just sit there. I says, okay. That's fine. Then she comes up And she tells me I have to get my shit out because I'm no longer staff. Well,
out of your locker?
Out of everything. Off the loft from the hygiene bay. And so I get a little distraught, and I said some words I shouldn't have said. I called her a name, and now I'm 86 from the lot permanently.
When did all this happen?
Just a few days ago. Now, they still owe me a check, which by law, at the end of termination on a position, I even got it in my backpack. It says that you have to give the employee his paycheck at the end of the time of his dismissal. Well, here I am 4 days later, and I don't have my check. They're pulling some shit that, you know, they're not there, we're not here. Well, you're obligated by law to give me my check.
Gotcha.
So up in the armory and at the church groups, you have to say, show ID, and at the armory you have to let them search your bags and be patted down.
Really? Now, yeah. They do that with every person?
Every person.
Search your bags and get patted down. How about an anal check? Do they do a quick anal check?
I wouldn't doubt it.
What they
no.
should be doing is drug tests on all the employees there. And I'm homeless and used a lot, so.
I know about you. All right.
Where's my hug?
How are you?
Okay, we're talking with
Sarah Jones.
And Sarah, you are a well-dressed young woman who now works in town?
Actually, I go to school here.
And where do you go to school?
At UC Santa Cruz.
And how, what grade?
Well, I'm a freshman, so I'm 18.
And where are you from?
I'm from up north, a little town by Lake Tahoe called Nevada City, which has a similar problem.
How's your housing situation?
My housing is a good situation. I'm living with my best friend. You know, things are good. My parents are paying for it. So, I mean, you know, I know I'm lucky, so.
But you have a lot of people, you know, some friends who are homeless, right?
Most of my friends actually are homeless back home, and also I have a few friends here.
Huh. Do you actually have any homeless friends here?
Yes, I do.
And how did that happen? One doesn't think of UCSC students, fashionable UCSC students, as usually getting involved with homeless folks. Okay, so you do look a little ill there. Yeah, not feeling well.
No.
Yeah. So how did you come to meet homeless folks here? How did that happen?
This summer I came down just to sort of check out the area and everything, and I met a really cool guy, and you know, we just started talking on the street and everything.
A homeless lover here?
Not really a lover, a really good friend. Stays with me up on campus sometimes. You know, reminded me a lot of my friends back home, and so it, I don't know, we just hit it off. He's a really cool guy, and, you know.
How big is the city you live in back home?
Very, very small.
It's Nevada City?
Yeah, Nevada.
How large is it?
God, it's like 7,000 people, something like that. I could be completely wrong. I haven't lived there for a while, but it's very small.
And how many homeless people are in Nevada City?
I don't know any exact numbers. I know that it's a big problem with tourism and whatnot because it's a tourist town, a little mining community, and a lot of authorities are upset about the number of kids and homeless people who are out on the streets because it...
How many friends do you have are homeless there?
Oh, God. 6 or 7 who are actually homeless, you know, kind of have to live around at other friends' houses and stuff.
You're in good terms with your folks? You live with your folks?
I don't live with them. My parents live in Poland, but I am on very good terms with them. I just spoke with them this morning.
How do you live with guardians, or what's your situation in Nevada City?
In Nevada City, we have our house. I mean, I'm 18, so I don't really need guardians.
Emancipated suddenly. At last.
Sort of.
Right, but you before, when you were 17, who did you live with?
With my parents.
So they've gone back to Poland?
Well, they live in Poland now. I lived in Israel for 2 years before this, and then I lived in Mexico for 4 years before that. And so it's been a while since I lived in Nevada City, but every summer we'd go back, and that's my home. So.
Huh. Sounds like you've been to a variety of places. Of course, we're down here on the mall trying to sign people up for a campaign to end the sleeping ban. Does this interest you?
Yeah, it does, because we're living in America, and I've lived in all sorts of different countries and been to visited so many different countries, and, you know, as screwed up as the American government can be and everything, you know, this is one of the greatest nations out there, and for us to be having problems like the homeless problem is just, it's beyond me. We shouldn't be having that. And any way to fight it is a help.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For outside borders, and it's...
Sing a song.
What time is it, anyway? It's...
What do you got?
20 to 6.
20 to 6. We're talking to
Michael Weiler.
And Michael, you were around doing some protesting against the sleeping ban. How long ago was it?
Oh, that was back in the early 91, 92, something like that. Like, Aptos didn't care if you slept in the camp down in Aptos, but everywhere else in the county, they're saying, no, no, and they give you a ticket. It's like $161. Sure, you can't pay, you're homeless. So you have to spend time in their jail, which the county makes money off of you being in it. You serve like 6 days out of 10, you know. And the county says, oh, well, we'll just give them another ticket. Let them out right now. You know, and they made all the money from the federal government. And that's not right, you know. They ought to sympathize with the homeless, you know, instead of just say, screw you, you ain't got a job, you're homeless and all that stuff. They should, you know, look in their heart and really think about that, you know.
Particularly as we turn towards Christmas. Thank you, Iron Mike. Anything you want to add?
No, I just hope that people learn to get stuck off of what I say, stupid. They're stuck on stupid and they don't know how to get off. It's not all about money. It's the people in the county. It's not the money at all. There's so much old money in this county. Why are they striving after more? You know, live with the people, deal with the people. Don't strive after more money. What are you going to do with it? You die. You can't take it with you.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're talking to Dan Hopkins. Dan, you've been spreading a rumor that you've heard that Labor Ready is...
And I actually talked about that rumor earlier. These are conversations actually from a day or two ago on the mall. Rumor was that Labor Ready is preparing to remove campsites along the San Lorenzo River next week, and that's apparently true. But it is also the case that, according to Larry Templeton, who is out there at Camp Paradise, that they're after campsites other than his. So that's good news. And what we're going to do now, actually, is a kind of a special treat. I'm going to make a phone call to a man who regularly supports homeless people in the most direct way. He feeds them, and he feeds them not just behind closed doors, where it's fashionable to do that at the soup kitchen or at the homeless services center.
Hi there.
But rather, we're talking now to Joseph Schultz. He feeds them, he has fed them actually at protest demonstrations where homeless people are going against the grain, trying to change the law to make it legal to sleep at night, legal to, oh, let's say, be in public spaces. Hey there, Joe Schultz.
Hey, Robert.
And you have actually been arrested for this kind of behavior in the past, right?
Well, it does ruffle some people the wrong way. The very idea that people can get fed without paying for it is just, you know, just too much for some people to bear.
Well, it does take away from, you know, the proceeds of the more exclusive French restaurant in town. And, you know, I think you should show some respect for your fellow merchants there. I say fellow because at one time you were a part owner of India Joe's restaurant, right?
Yes, I had India Joe's for 25 years.
What? And you actually probably got a lot of flack for carrying those cups of soup to, what was it, Brian Staley back in 1989 at the town clock?
Like
You want to tell us a little bit about that, or are we going back too far for you?
No, there's a few brain cells intact still, even after dealing with a business for that long.
Uh-huh.
This has been a long-running battle to sort of fight for dignity of all of our citizens, and as such, it becomes really a human rights issue more than anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the American, cherished American dream is to be able to make money, but there is another stream in the American tradition which has to do with hospitality, which is taking care of people that are less fortunate perhaps than yourself. And these two attitudes tend to come in conflict in areas like Santa Cruz, where there's such an incredible shortage of low-end possibilities, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you I know in 1989 were approached by some scallywags who had been I guess they've been serving people hot soup at the town clock under the leadership of Jane Immler and Linda Edwards.
Sandy Loringer was still, or Sandy, she was earlier, maybe.
Now, Sandy Loringer was a part of that effort. Sandy and Jane were kind of the master chefs. They actually began with they were part of a Christmas parade behind Marty Wormhout in a thing called Bag Ladies Revolt, where they dressed up as bag ladies, had a shopping cart right behind the big limousine car of Marty Wormhout in the Christmas Day Parade, which is coming around again this year, I guess next Sunday. I'm guessing it's next Sunday. and the Marty's car broke down. So Marty had to have a spectacle of these bag ladies giving out flyers denouncing the city for Marty Wormhout's sleeping ban, because she was the new mayor, and she in fact had been supporting the sleeping ban. And she had done some rather absurd activities that summer, claiming that she was doing something by putting out a little card, giving police a card that referred people to the two shelter beds available at that time. There were two emergency shelter beds available total at that time in 1988 for homeless people. It was quite something. And it was actually, it was at the River Street shelter. So she was very embarrassed by this. So she sent the police in the next week to remove the Immler protest from the town clock, which talked about was concerned about the sleeping ban, the beatings of homeless people. And then we kind of worked out a deal with Marty Wormhout that we actually got them to open a meal for a month called the December Dinners, and they were out at the River Street shelter for a month. But then the city would only do a month, we went back to the town clock, began serving free food again, calling ourselves SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, and then this New Year's 1989, and they came in with riot gear and massive police presence, and they arrested us, and then they went to court and they got an injunction against us. And it was around several months later that we continued to feed, we continued to get arrested, we just kept doing it. And then you, in April, I guess, prepared some soup and were carrying some soup across the street to give to some people at the town clock, your own soup, prepared in a certified kitchen of a restaurant, right?
Yeah, well, it seemed to me important to support the idea that people could actually feed people without money being involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when I got down to the town clock, our boys in blue met me and hauled me away.
Did they actually handcuff you?
Oh yeah, that's part of procedure. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than a hot pot of soup.
And that's where we made our fatal mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Our fatal mistake was in not suing the police force big time for that act, because it was a false arrest. You had a permit to serve the food you were serving.
Well, they didn't know that. I mean, again, the police are sort of caught in a hard place here, because they've got a lot of different masters, remember. And they're trying to please all of them, which means, of course, they please none of them.
Right, but had we made that lawsuit, I don't think there would have been any trouble whatsoever for the next 10 years. Because, you see, you're right, they didn't know that you were illegal or legal, but then again, they didn't know that with anybody else either, so their responsibility was to find that there was probable cause. You know, that phrase that our president has forgotten in terms of the current so-called terrorist bills and the detention and surveillance stuff that's sweeping the country. So you've been serving ever since, I guess, in different times when I or someone else has given you a call looking for some... You're very good at vegan and vegetarian food, I understand.
Well, I like to have food that everybody can eat without, there being questions of whether... I like food that brings people together, that everybody can share it. And using food as a way of dividing people is certainly not my idea of a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So vegan, pretty much anyone... There are very few carnivores who will turn their nose up at good soup, whether it's got meat in it or not. I'm not a vegan myself, but I like to make it as open to as many people as possible without that being the big issue of, can I share this with you? Are you sure it's okay?
And equal opportunity.
Like to say,
soup.
This is going to be okay. It's going to be, it'll be kosher. It'll be, it won't trip anybody's alarm bells.
Did you get much flack from the business community for your high-profile support in the most direct way of these kinds of protests?
Well, yes. I mean, the general line is that we're creating a magnet for homeless people. This is they're afraid to make things too comfortable for people that are disadvantaged in any way. And so a lot of people will, if we just make it horrible enough for people, then all of our problems will be solved. I really take exception to that idea. And I'd get into a lot of arguments with people about the right to make it, to treat people well, basically, is what I see it as.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, most business owners are pretty much business, they're interested in keeping their business going, so they don't have as much time to waste on these issues as a lot of other busybodies who are just trying to, free the world from homeless by choice, activists of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised to believe this is a free country and that people should basically be able to make a lot of choices about their lifestyle as long as it's not impinging on other people. And again, sharing food is one of the ways to make it so people don't have to impinge on each other to survive.
Well, Neil Coonerty, who owns the bookshop Santa Cruz and was a mayor of the town as well as council member in the early 90s, apparently wrote a letter to the Santa Cruz Sentinel yesterday, which I didn't read, but I heard about, denouncing the protest in front of a bakery not 2.5 blocks from where you live, Emily Riley's Good Things to Eat on Mission and Laurel. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've talked about this on the show, that Riley, as a councilwoman, has voted notoriously twice in two heavy anti-homeless votes, one to essentially drive homeless in vehicles out of Harvey West Park, mm-hmm. another to menace not just Camp Paradise, but everybody else along the river who's camping there without giving them any additional shelter space or fulfilling her earlier pledge to end the sleeping ban, which she made before she was city council member and before she started getting big donations from, I should say, non-sympathetic sources. So I'm wondering, how do you feel about this Emily Riley's... It isn't really a boycott. It wasn't conceived of as a boycott, though I think that might be just fine for me. It was an attempt to educate the public and get them to talk to Emily Riley. Do you have any thoughts about this happening so near your house?
Strangely enough, our country was built on civil disobedience, on dissent, on the idea that it was okay that you needed to speak, that you had a civic duty to speak your mind about issues that concerned you. And ever since, the Tea Party of 200 years ago, the powers that be have been doing everything they can to delegitimize any speaking out whatsoever. So that the first point to make is that, you know, a protest doesn't need to be appropriate to be reasonable. That just because you don't think that somebody should protest something doesn't mean they don't have a right to protest it. And so I think basically to turn that around in a positive way, people have a right to protest anything they feel strongly about, and they have a right and a duty. Whether it's exactly, you know, the problem with protesting is it's often a broad brush. I have nothing against Emily Riley's business